Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. This is Rob Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And Rob, I am so thrilled to be talking about the movie that we've selected for today, La Nave de los Monstruos, or The Ship of Monsters, an astoundingly, shockingly, devastatingly awesome Mexican film from 1960 in the exquisite genre of science fiction horror romantic comedy musical. This is a movie about women from the planet Venus who are roaming deep space on a quest for the hunkiest aliens in the galaxy and skip from planet to planet, collecting reptile cyclops hunks, kissy face brain mutant hunks, fanghead skeleton hunks, until they finally meet the hunkiest hunk of all, a rascal rider of the Chihuahua Plains, played by the incomparable Lalo Gonzalez, aka El Piporo. More on him later. This movie is so much fun.
Yeah, this was a real pleasant surprise. When you brought this title to our attention, I did like some preliminary research. I looked it up in the Psychotronic video guide, and I was like, all right, it's listed there. It sounds like it might be good. So I went into it expecting there to be something awesome about it. You know, I'd find a monster I liked or a performance I liked. I was also expecting a certain amount of dead space in there, as is sometimes the case with films from this time period of this caliber. But this one is just wall-to-wall excellence.
Yes, totally. They're not a dull moment. I mean, we've watched some sci-fi horror movies from the 50s that they might have a really fun, goofy-looking monster, or they might have elements that work really well. Not of This Earth comes to mind, but then there'll be other moments that are kind of some dead space, kind of dull, square, lug dudes just standing around delivering dry dialogue. This movie has essentially none of that. It's all killer, no filler.
Exactly. This one's great.
Would this count as our first science fiction horror romantic comedy musical?
Yes, it definitely would. I guess you could rank it as one of our first true musicals, or it's as close to a true musical as we've covered. Certainly some of the movies we've looked at have complete songs within them, but this one has multiple musical numbers. I mean, they're not, they're definitely lip synced. There's maybe only a limited amount of dance choreography going on, but still there's enough music in this film that it feels like a musical.
Oh, no, I would defend the dance sequences. There's one dance scene in this movie that is just divine. It's the one later on where Lalo Gonzalez is dancing and singing to the vampire queen. Spoiler, we'll get to some twists about this later on. But he's also trying to steal her, like, her technology, her space weapon. And so they're dancing around, and she's making eyes at him, and he's singing a song about the seasons.
Yeah, true. Okay. But that felt also very organic. It felt like organic dancing that just came out of the music in the moment.
Yeah. So, of course, folks out there, you know we love our unlikely genre mashups. We've talked about supernatural wrestling movies, supernatural biker movies. But this has got to be one of the biggest, like, you know, suicide soft drink kind of mashups of all time. It's got really almost every movie genre in the same thing. I think it is most often referred to as a science fiction comedy, but it's also definitely got horror elements. Like, some of the things about the monsters in this movie get surprisingly dark in a way that you would not expect for a light comedy. And the musical numbers are just wonderful.
Yeah, like when we say they're alien monsters and they're hunks or males, you might think of... What's that movie that had Jeff Goldblum in it where they were all alien hunks?
Oh, was that Earth Girls Are Easy?
Yeah, you might be thinking of Earth Girls Are Easy, but no. These are entirely non-human aliens. Some of them are not even remotely human. So just go ahead and exercise that image from your mind.
This movie might be called Earth Males Are Liars, but lovable liars. But so anyway, having read about this movie before I watched it, I expected the plot to be bonkers, which it absolutely is. It is just like goobers inside out. This movie will give you hard-boiled egg eyes. But also, the musical numbers are charming. The comedy scenes are really funny. It just works on almost every level. It pretty much rules.
Yeah, yeah. The humor I found held up pretty well. I was laughing at some of the intentional humor in this picture. I also have to throw in that, oh man, I love a good movie poster. And if you look around for movie posters for this film, you'll find some kind of boring images. But there's also a terrific image of the sort of lizard cyclops monster, way bigger in the poster than he is in the film. And he's holding a woman in one hand, like palmed like a baseball. And it's got this wonderful orange and red look going on. It's absolutely beautiful. And in fact, I showed this to my wife, and she has agreed that if we can find this, we are going to put it on a wall in our house. It's just that lovely.
Godspeed on your quest. I hope you do find it. Now, you've been having trouble, right? It seems like merch for this movie is rather scarce on the ground.
Yeah, yeah. So far, all I've seen is somebody in Italy selling this poster on eBay. So I'm going to continue to look around a little bit.
Now, I think this poster is the Italian poster for the movie, right? Because the title is a little bit different. It's La Nave del Monstri.
Yes, that would be it. Yeah. I think I've also seen maybe the Italian DVD has this art on it. So yes, I highly recommend looking this up. It's just gorgeous.
Maybe we can hit a little montage of some audio from the film.
Uno sabe controllare l'atomo. Mi rasa perdió la materia, pero seguimos vivos a pesar de nuestro aspecto. Y nuestro poder es terrible. Danos la libertad y nada te haremos.
En Venus serán libres y felices.
¡Ahora!
Well, I hope that conveyed at least some of the magic of this film, because there's a lot visually going on here.
Are you ready to talk about some of the people involved?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Okay, so the director of this movie was named Rogelio A. Gonzalez, and I was looking around for good biographical info about him. I couldn't find much in English, but I found a biography in Spanish on the website of the National Autonomous University of Mexico website, and I had to run this through Google Translate, so I hope nothing significant is getting lost. But just to summarize some of the stuff that's covered in there, Gonzalez was a Mexican actor, director, radio host, radio producer, film producer, and screenwriter who worked throughout the golden age of Mexican cinema. He was born on January 27th, 1922, in Monterrey, Nuevo León, as Antonio Rogelio Gonzalez Villarreal. And apparently in his younger years, Gonzalez was preparing for a career in medicine, but at some point he got that movie bug. He quit his studies and he went into the film industry, first as an actor and a screenwriter in the 40s, and then as a director beginning in the 50s. And he directed a ton of movies in the 50s through the early 80s, though I don't think I have seen any of them other than this one now.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I've seen anything on this list, though there are some interesting looking titles. I noticed that his last picture in 83 was Mexico 2000,
which is a sci-fi movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Some sort of a sci-fi political commentary, satire sort of a thing.
Yeah. And there was one title of his I came across that I don't remember if he wrote this one or directed it, but it was called like The Skeleton of Mrs. So-and-so. I don't remember the name.
Mrs. Morales. I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And, I've also heard that Conquistador de la Luna is also supposed to be rather weird.
Oh, Conqueror of the Moon. Yeah, actually, Michael Weldon mentions that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he mentions that as being standout weird as well.
I was trying to find a copy of this that could be watched. The only thing I can find is it's on a DVD that you can get somewhere that I think does not have dubbing or English subtitles, as far as I can tell. So, but I don't know. It looks so visually strange that it might be worth it, even if you don't speak Spanish. You can probably kind of suss out the plot.
Yeah.
But anyway, a little more about Rogelio Gonzalez's biography. There are actually two major Gonzalez's in this movie. But Rogelio Gonzalez, the director, he was also a union leader in the director's division of the Mexican Union of Cinema Production Workers. And he passed away due to a tragic highway accident in 1984. But as for personal descriptions of his sort of, you know, his presence and personality, the website I mentioned cites a description of Gonzalez from a magazine called Cinevoz in the year 1949. So this would have been before he started directing, back when he was just an actor and a writer. But the description through translation goes like this. He has a clear intelligence, and his sentences are logical and precise, despite the passion he puts into them. He is tall, with blue eyes, thin, almost transparent. Sometimes he hunches over as if overwhelmed by excessive work, since he writes at all hours, sometimes living exclusively at night.
Oh, wow.
Now, this profile was written many years before he made Ship of Monsters. Ship of Monsters came out in 1960. Again, I think this was in 1949. But I like to imagine that it was this nocturnal consciousness that birthed the physical forms of the eye-popping monsters in this movie. The furry spider beetle, the irritable lizard cyclops, the kissy face brain mutant, and the wonderful bone boy. So like I said, I have not seen any of Gonzalez's other movies, but given this, he's got a real talent for extremely visually charming, tight, well-paced cinema.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Now, a quick note about the individuals with writing credits on this film. First of all, the story credit goes to Jose Maria Fernandez Unsain, who lived 1921 through 2003, an Argentinian film director, screenwriter, and playwright who was exiled to Mexico after the overthrow of Juan Perón. This was because Unsain had connections to Eva Perón. So very prolific. He has, I think, 122 writing credits on IMDb. But then adaptation writing credit goes to Alfredo Varela, who lived 1912 through 1986. Now, this is a guy who wrote various Westerns. Now, according to IMDb, this is definitely the Mexican-born Alfredo Varela, but there's also an Argentinian novelist and communist journalist named Alfredo Varela who lived at the same time, like with birth and death dates, just like 2 years off. So I was a little confused by that at first. I was trying to figure out, could this be, given the Argentina connection here? But okay. It seems to be two different people.
Okay, now coming to the cast, this movie, again, just has a wonderful cast, and we should start with the lead actor, Eulalio Gonzalez, also known as Lalo Gonzalez, also known by the nickname El Piporo. And I was trying to look it up, what does that really mean? I don't know if it means something different in the context of his nickname, but the only thing I could really find as a translation is that this word means bassoonist, like the player of a bassoon. I'm not sure what to make of that. But Lalo Gonzalez was a musician. He was widely known as a comic actor and a singer.
Yeah, Gonzalez was a musician, comedian, actor, director, and producer. And in this film, yeah, he's playing this Piporo character, a kind of stereotypical North Mexican rancher. This was an immensely popular character. It was central to his musical identity, and it helped make him the face of música norteña during the golden age of Mexican cinema. Now, música norteña is the regional music of northern Mexico. That's essentially what it means. Mm-hmm. Traditionally utilizing the accordion, the bajo sexto guitar, and it apparently emerged in the 19th century out of elements of traditional Mexican music, along with like German, Austrian, and Czech folk music. Very popular in northern Mexico and also among many Mexican Americans. So within this genre and within Mexican cinema of this period, Piporo here, Gonzalez, is a legend. I think it's important to realize, like, this is a film that is showcasing somebody that was already at or near the peak of their initial popularity.
Yes.
Though this is a guy that would remain important throughout his life.
Right. And so, as we're saying, so much about this movie is great, but a lot of it really rests on the incredible star power of Lalo Gonzalez. He is a, I would say, like, he has a once in a generation kind of star presence. His screen charisma is overwhelming. He is just an absolutely lovable liar rascal, and mm-hmm. the personality, it just sort of like, you know, drips out of the TV screen. Like 15 minutes into the movie, Rachel and I watched it together, and she adored the movie as well. But we were immediately just like Googling other Lalo Gonzalez movies. We wanted to see everything he was in. Unfortunately, I couldn't find anything else he did involving monsters. So this might be the apex, but we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, his humor really translates even without an actual with translation. Obviously we had subtitles. I think we each had slightly different subtitles.
Yes.
As is kind of becoming a tradition here. Yeah. But it still oozes through, you know. Like you say, he's very charismatic, he's very funny. I think you would find him humorous even if you didn't know what he was saying.
I'm not aware that this movie has ever been dubbed into English, but it's the kind of performance where I would recommend watching it with the Spanish audio with subtitles, just because like the line delivery is so funny. It's like you can hear that it's funny even if you don't speak Spanish.
Right, right. And then also the songs that he's singing, they're, I think, always part of the plot. So you need to know what he's singing as well.
Right.
So if anyone out there wants to learn more about Norteña, then there are various sources you can go to. But I was looking around, and there's actually a book by Catherine Ragland titled Música Norteña, Mexican Americans Creating a Nation Between Nations. This came out in 2009. In this book, she explores the topic in depth, but I found this particular summary rather interesting. Quote, Música Norteña, a musical genre with its roots in the folk ballad traditions of northern Mexico and the Texas-Mexican border region, has become a hugely popular musical style in the U.S., particularly among Mexican immigrants, featuring evocative songs about undocumented border crossings, drug traffickers, and the plight of immigrant workers. Música Norteña has become the music of a, quote, nation between nations.
Mm.
And she also points out that it's sometimes seen, this particular genre, as being maybe less technically refined compared to other genres of Mexican like folk music, but it is often seen as being imbued with more feeling. And a lot of this seems to come from the idea that this was the music of working people who had to make time for music in the evenings and then put all their passion into that.
That's true, and a lot of the greatest folk music traditions do have origins like this. They're not from people who were, you know, full-time professional musicians, but, you know, consist of songs and structures and song elements created by people who were, you know, just like regular working people who were playing music for entertainment in the evenings. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I was very interested to learn this. So if anyone out there, if you know a great deal more about Norteña, and you have some experience with it, do write in, let us know. I'd love to know more about this interesting genre of music.
But the excellent cast does not stop there. So Lalo Gonzalez is playing our main earthling for the movie. He is Laureano is his character's name. But there are also a couple of other major characters who are aliens, these ladies from beyond. And they are played by Ana Bertha Lepe and Lorena Velazquez.
Yes. Lepe plays Gamma and Velazquez plays Beta. Both of our Venusians are played by former Miss Mexicos.
Now, I know you could easily make this mistake, but I want to be very pedantic about this. Lorena Velazquez's character, Beta, though she initially starts the movie on the planet Venus, she is not a Venusian.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
They say she is a daughter of Ur, the planet of shadows. And so she's an alien on Venus at the beginning of the movie and then travels with the Venusian Gamma on her mission.
Yeah, one of the really delectable things about this film is that there seems to be so much world building going on in it that on the surface would be completely unnecessary for a dumb monster movie that is basically just a vehicle for a popular musician and, right. and a couple of very attractive actors.
This is a light romantic musical comedy with killer monsters in it. Yeah.
And yet you get a sense that somebody put some thought into this about like, okay, what is Venus's role in the solar system and realms beyond the solar system? How is their power derived? Yeah. Because we ultimately have an interplanetary civilization outlined within this film.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about these two individuals. First of all, Lepe, who again plays Gamma. She lived 1934 through 2013. And she was a big deal. She was a stunning star of Mexico's golden age of cinema and a runner-up representing Mexico in the 1953 Miss Universe pageant. Other credits of hers include Renee Cardona's Neutron Traps the Invisible Killers from 1965. That stars also stars a guy by the name of Jorge Rivero, who was in a film called Werewolf that I think you're familiar with.
Oh, Jorge Rivero. Yeah.
She was also in three Santo movies, Santo versus the Diabolical Brain from 63, Santo in the Hotel of Death from 63, and Santo versus the King of Crime from 62.
Okay, got to put those on the list. Which one are we doing first? Diabolical Brain? That sounds good.
I don't know. I was looking. I think these all sound like maybe they're more crime-based Santo movies, you know?
Oh, so, Diabolical Brain isn't like a huge alien brain. It might be a smart criminal.
Yeah. Now, Velazquez, who again plays Beta, she was born in 1937. I think as of this recording is still around. She was also a big deal during Mexico's golden age of cinema. She was in two different Santo movies, both in 62, Santo versus the Zombies, and Santo versus the Vampire Women. And in that, she plays Zorina, Queen of the Vampires.
Okay, there's going to be some crossover here. Warning, I think I already said something to this effect. We will be spoiling some minor twists in this film. I hope you're okay with that. And so here's the spoiler. There is just a delightful twist about halfway through this movie where Lorena Velazquez's character is revealed to be a space vampire from the planet of the vampires. In fact, she's going to become the queen of the vampires by, I don't recall the exact plan, sucking everybody's blood and kidnapping Lalo Gonzalez, I think.
Right. And there's some politics in there, you know, like marrying the Prince of Mars and so forth.
That's right. Yeah.
But yeah, she's a natural to play a vampire queen. You know, she's got the look, she's got the charisma.
And I got to say, she is so good in this movie and in a comedy performance, because even in moments where she doesn't have any lines, she's really funny. She's often the funniest actor in a scene, just by doing hilarious things with her face. Like, she does these weird, I want that eyes at things, you know, like at weapons or at monsters or at a jukebox or at Piporo when he's dancing and singing a song about the seasons. She just does these eyes that that had Rachel and I shrieking with laughter.
Yeah, she's really good. And, you know, sometimes in films of this caliber, you have a role like this go to somebody who just kind of stands there. But no, she's never still, if not physically, at least like energy wise, there's always something going on in her head. She was also in Rene Cardona's 1963 non-Santo wrestling picture, Doctor of Doom, in which she stars as female wrestler or luchadora Gloria Venus, who has to stop an evil mad scientist with an ape named Gomar from carrying out sadistic brain transplant experiments.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, and she's Gloria Venus, and in this movie she's on a mission sponsored by the planet Venus?
It makes me think that this film was a big hit, or at least impressed enough people where they're like, this gal's great. We need a we're gonna make a movie. We need a vampire queen, bam, she's in. Or hey, we were thinking about having a Venusian, let's put her in. She has some sort of tie to Venus. Because she went on to play that Gloria Venus character again in 1964's Wrestling Women versus the Aztec Mummy. So, yeah, a number of interesting films are coming up with these two.
Beta is a queen. Lorena Velasquez rocks the screen in this film.
Now, we also have an actual queen in this. We have the Queen of Venus.
Oh, yeah.
And she is played by Consuelo Frank, who lived 1912 through 1991. And she has two Santo credits as well. 67 Santo versus the Martian Invasion and 68 Santos versus the Villains of the Ring. I haven't seen that one, but that one sounds like the most obvious title. Of course, Santo is going to fight Villains of the Ring. I don't know.
Who else would fight them?
Yeah. She was active much earlier. She was in, I think, two different 1942 Mexican adaptations of first the Three Musketeers, but then also The Count of Monte Cristo.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month. Taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Now, another great thing about this film is it has wonderful costumes, has wonderful monster effects. So I had to look up, well, who's behind this? And I'm not sure exactly. Sometimes the monster credits are kind of lost, especially in limited credits for a film like this. But Julio Chavez is credited for costumes. And I noticed that among many other credits, they did costumes and wardrobe on 1969's Santo and the Treasure of Dracula, which we, of course, covered several months back.
So this is a Santo-heavy connection section.
Yeah, yeah. And when it comes to the music, we have another direct reference to Santo and the Treasure of Dracula, because Sergio Guerrero, who lived 1921 through 2008, he did the music in this, which has some neat sci-fi sounds in there in places, which I liked. But this is a guy with 252 composer credits on IMDb, including such Mexican films as Neutron Traps, The Invisible Killers, La Sombra Vengadora, and again, Santo and the Treasure of Dracula. So yes, lots of Santo connections here.
Now, if Guerrero here did the music, I don't know if that necessarily would include other types of sound design, but I did want to highlight that this movie has some really good sound design. Like, there are moments where the monsters are speaking, and it's not necessarily music, though I do love the music in this movie, but it's like the way that the vocal effects they've done on the voiceovers for when the puppets are talking, giving them these raspy voices as if they're emanating from the caves of Hades, you know, just great monster voices.
Yeah, some wonderful Spanish monster voices in this. It's pretty great. Well, should we get into the plot a little bit here? We've been talking it up. Let's tell folks what this movie is about.
Okay, now we're not going to do a full scene by scene on this one. We might go a little more detail early on, and then later for the later parts of the movie, just talk about some highlights and ideas. Mm-hmm. But I do want to get very granular with the introduction, because I think the very intro of the movie really sets the move fast and break things tone. I would say in the much better sense of that phrase. That's the attitude this film has toward plotting. So the very first thing we see is an atom. You see a little, like, the old school representation of the atomic nucleus with all of its orbitals, and the narrator says, "This is an atom." Then it shows us a planet. At first I thought it was the moon, but I think it's supposed to be planet Earth. And then it says, "This is the universe." Then it goes on. "An atom is infinitely small. The universe is infinitely large. However, everything is ruled by the same laws. Man has learned to release the power of the atom, and with it wants to conquer the universe." Some really elegant symmetry in this opening narration. This is almost a strange poem of sorts.
Yeah.
And then the narration goes on. It says, "But he dreams of leaving the Earth and leaving his seed on a distant planet, perhaps with the subconscious desire of starting a new race, one that will remain ignorant of atomic power and warfare." Right. So the idea is that, all species maybe that discover atomic energy and atomic weapons eventually will want to go sort of create a new version of themselves on a planet that is blissfully free of this terrible knowledge. And of course, throughout the while this, we're getting stock footage of mushroom clouds from atomic tests. But then it goes on to say, "And that is a planet known to us." So here we cut to Venus. It says, "Let's go on a characteristically dark night to Venus." And we see these creepy images of lights with a hazy foreground. So they're just kind of very fuzzily defined lights in the background and mist and darkness with these figures in cloaks wandering into the frame. And it's actually quite creepy.
It is. I found this quite evocative early on. Now, I understand some of these space scenes we see early in the film are taken from 1957's Road to the Stars, a Soviet film about the possible future of spaceflight. But I'm not sure about these kind of dark hooded figures here with the cosmic backdrop.
Yeah, I don't know about those. I do think, I think you're right. I was also reading that some of these early scenes are just lifted from other films.
One thing I want to add is that you could be watching this and think, all right, here's our sort of out there's introduction, but then we're going to go on to another movie and this will have little or nothing to do with where we're going. But it does come back up again. It seems to be it seems to be stitched into the plot itself, and it's not just something that's just tacked on the front to keep us in our seats for a few minutes.
That's right. I would say that actually this is pretty coherent. As mm-hmm. as bonkers as the plot of this movie is, it all kind of ties together. Like it makes sense, even though it's nuts. So, okay, we learn that the planet Venus is preparing for the most important interplanetary space flight in their history. And then we get shots of the surface of Venus, where we see a bunch of women lining up in military formations outside of a rocket ship. And there is nary a man in sight. So what's going on here? Well, we get some exposition. The regent of Venus comes out. I think she's the queen of the planet, and she's addressing two women. So you have Ana Bertha Lepe and Lorena Velazquez as the characters Gamma and Beta, respectively, and they are being given a mission. Gamma is the commander-in-chief of the interplanetary spacecraft. So the regent of Venus explains the situation, and the situation is dire. She says, okay, the last male on our planet is dead. They're all gone. They are dead due to an atomic scourge. And so she is giving a mission to these two brave space pilots. They're going to fly around and go to all the planets and collect the most perfect male specimens to bring back to Venus. And then Gamma says, I will bring you the most beautiful male specimens. The most perfect of them will sire the new generations of Venus. And then we get the part I alluded to earlier, where the regent says that Beta, played by Lorena Velazquez, she's a foreigner to Venus. She's the daughter of Ur, the planet of shadows, and she has been assigned to travel alongside Gamma on her mission because she's the greatest space navigator on the planet. And then the last thing she says to them is, "In you we trust." Question about Gamma's outfit. Did you ever figure out what the thing on her shoulder is?
Oh, yeah, it kind of has this kind of tassel-y, feathery thing, but also might be an antenna. I'm not sure. Maybe she has, like, wireless in the suit. I'm not sure.
I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be decorative or supposed to be technology. But, yeah, she has this array of sprigs of something coming off of her left shoulder, and I don't know what they are. And they're there, like, the whole movie. She changes outfits, but that's always there. It looks kind of like she had some of those like wire fairy wings, but somebody crumpled them up and moved them all to one shoulder. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's stylish. I mean, that seems to have been the main intent here, is that these women should look extremely stylish as they travel through space.
They look super cool. And it is announced via footage from another movie that the orbits have aligned, and so it is time for them to depart. So we see Gamma and Beta. They enter the interior of their spaceship, which maybe we should describe, because a lot of the action of the film will take place here. So there are like two pilot seats where they're operating these big control panels. I guess Beta is the navigator and Gamma is the commander. And then behind them, there is all this heavy machinery, which looked like real heavy machinery, not just like something on the set. I don't know what they were filming. Maybe they were generators of some kind, like these big gears working back and forth.
Yeah, the set is great. It definitely, they do a great job establishing it as the command center of this spaceship. I got kind of tones of observatory from parts of
it, but
I'm not really sure because clearly huge parts of it are an actual set. So it's not just that they went into an observatory or into a factory and started filming there. There's also some really elaborate stuff they constructed. So I don't know.
Yeah, there are these big clusters of balls up on the ceiling, like gigantic grapes. I don't know what those are supposed to be. And then there is a big platform looking out over the rest of the set, like a preacher's pulpit. And there's, I don't know, various weird glass bulbs and files in the background and just rivets and metal everywhere. It's cool. Mm-hmm. And then while the credits play, we see them setting down on strange worlds, including this one world that's full of crooked spires of rock that are sort of the same size and shape as the rocket that lands, except they're, you know, they're stony and jagged. And I guess this must be happening off screen, but during this credit sequence, we're to understand that they're out there collecting all of the males along their journey, which they tend to keep frozen in giant cubes of ice. And they accomplish this by operating a camera flash at them. And it made me wonder which of the male monsters comes from the Spike Rock planet.
I don't know. It could be home to... Well, we know this is not the surface of Mars, because we know what Mars looks like, so...
Right. That's where Brain Boy comes from.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the Prince of Mars, so it must be one of the others. This would be a suitable planet, perhaps, for the skeletal, fleshless being.
Yeah, Billy Bones, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we'll get to him in a minute.
Another major development on the initial premise is that somewhere along the way, Gamma and Beta acquire an alien robot called Tor. And Tor is a major helper of their mission as they go along. He wasn't theirs originally, but they say that they, again, in a strange bit of just ever so briefly alluded to world building, they say that they collected him from a dead planet where all of the humans had annihilated themselves with atomic war.
Yeah, he's key to the whole operation, though, because he has the ability to freeze the monsters in blocks of some sort of ice. Otherwise, they could still handle the monsters. They prove that later on. They have space flamethrowers, but this is a huge help.
Well, no, I think they can also freeze the monsters with their little, camera flash box. I think.
Oh, can they? Okay.
But he's very helpful because he contains these encyclopedias of knowledge about all the planets, right?
Yeah, that's right. And these are often really funny, sometimes with some, political satire thrown in there.
Right.
When they end up asking about Mexico and stuff.
Right. Yes. So so eventually the robot tells them their spacecraft is suffering mechanical trouble and they got to set down on the nearest planet for repairs. Well, what's the nearest planet? The robot says it is Antarsis 135 sub 2, planetoid of the fourth order. And so how does the robot know what this planet is? Well, he says, before the men of his planet all destroyed themselves with nuclear war, they left these encyclopedias of knowledge inside his computer brain. And the men of his planet had originally wanted to explore this planetoid, Antarsis 135 sub 2. They wanted to explore it, but then they learned a bit more about it and ultimately decided it was not worth it because, quote, it is inhabited by beings that seem to be intelligent, but they do not know what they want and enjoy destroying each other. And, of course, what planet's he talking about?
Yeah, it's us, and it's pretty spot on.
Yeah. So Gamma and Beta perform a perilous emergency landing, and they set down in the Mexican state of Chihuahua, which is in the central north. It's along the border with Texas and New Mexico. And so they're setting down their spaceship, and as that's happening, we get our first meeting with Lalo Gonzalez as a character named Laureano. What's he doing? Well, of course, he is out riding his horse and singing a love song to nobody in particular. And the first scene where we meet him, you just kind of instantly fall in love with this. Like, he sees the rocket ship, he thinks it's a shooting star, and he makes a wish. And his wish is for quote, I hope for a pretty girl, but one who loves me. And then he sings a song about wishing on this star to find a woman to fall in love with. In my translation, he kept saying he was searching for a divine love. But then the other half of the song is about how everybody incorrectly believes that he is no good. So the lyrics include things like, they say I'm a crook and a liar and I chicken out in the end, but it's not true. And then you remember when he gives the horse guarantee? He's like, if you don't believe me, ask my horse. My horse will tell you I never tell a lie. And then the horse starts bucking and neighing.
Some fun stuff when you first see this character, there might be a temptation to think, okay, this is going to be just a shining white knight, that he's going to be a pure hero. But then you quickly realize, no, he's a bard, if not an actual rogue. But a very funny one. The comedy begins to shine through, and there's some stuff with him, like the way he's riding his horse, either intentionally or accidentally, but I believe it must be part of the character. You get the idea that he's not that good at riding the horse. There's some awkward dismounts, which adds to the comedic nature of this character.
You know, I was trying, they may have said it in the movie and it went past me, but I was trying to figure out, what does Laureano do? I was thinking maybe he's supposed to be a rancher, but you don't really see much about that. Is he just a professional liar?
He has a cow.
Okay, he has a cow.
We spend a lot of time with that cow.
Yeah.
So I think he's technically a rancher. Maybe that's part of the joke, is that he's, because the character, I'm to understand, his performance character is supposed to be a North Mexican rancher. Maybe the joke is, okay, he only has this one cow, and it may or might not even be that good of a milk producer, depending on the joke.
But basically all he does is like ride around singing and then go into town and tell awesome lies.
Yes.
So we see him go into a bar and everybody's drinking and he's telling these tall tales about like how he foiled a robbery with a bunch of bandits and he killed two bandits with one bullet left in his gun by holding a knife in front of the barrel and splitting the bullet in half so it hit them both. And then he starts shifting from here to these increasingly bizarre stories about unusual bears and then dinosaurs. Did your translation include dinosaurs?
It did, yes.
Okay.
I wasn't entirely sure what to make of that. At first, I thought maybe it was a joke about chickens, and I was thinking, oh, well, this is actually scientifically accurate in some respects. But then there was the thing about dinosaurs without bones, and I'm not sure. Yeah. So maybe something is ultimately lost in translation, but it still came off as very fun and funny.
It seems like normally he is wont to tell stories about dinosaurs out by the sawmill, dinosaurs without bones, boneless buffalo dinosaurs.
But in this whole situation, he almost sort of gets into a duel. Like a shootout scenario.
What's his name? Rubiano or something?
Yeah. But then kind of talks his way, jokes his way out of it. So they do a great job of establishing his character. Like, no, you know, everybody loves him, but also everybody's a little sick of him. You know, he's a likable guy, but maybe he's not really doing the most important job in town, whatever it may be.
You almost get the impression that if he were to encounter real monsters later, nobody would believe him because he has cried dinosaur too many times.
True.
Meanwhile, after Gamma and Beta land on Earth, they come out to explore their surroundings, and there is this hilarious scene where they just appear to get extreme pleasure from the discovery of breathable atmosphere.
Yes, yep. This is a great part. My wife actually walked in the room and saw this part, and she was laughing as well. They're just totally turned on by this planet's atmosphere, and they do a great job of playing this up.
Yeah, and so the two aliens come across Laureano on the road while he's out wandering, and they are just immediately smitten, right? As I guess nearly anyone would be. But so there are some jokes about them trying to find a language where they can both communicate, but it turns out the aliens do speak Spanish. I think they've got sort of encyclopedic knowledge of all languages in the solar system. Mm-hmm. And then through a radio uplink to their robot Tor, they look things up. They, like, in the middle of the conversation, freeze Laureano and then look up, like, Mexico to learn things about it. And then also when he asks, are you two from the circus? I assume because of the strange way they're dressed, they have to look up what a circus is. And this was really funny. Tor gets back to them and says, well, a circus is where animals do human jobs and humans do animal jobs.
I love that part. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they're also like, Laureano, are all Earthmen as gorgeous as you? And he's like, no, I admit it. No, they're not.
Because it should be stressed, all the males that they have kidnapped thus far are literal monsters.
Yes.
They're not even remotely human. They're big, like scaly or shaggy or pulsating monsters. And so, yeah, like it makes sense. They see this guy and they're like, well, heck, we can stop the project right here.
Right. So they split, they tell him they'll meet him later. And then they go to their ship to phone home. They're like, Commander, we have hunks. And they're going to bring him back to Venus. And so, I think some other stuff happens here, but then eventually we get back to the home of Laureano, where he lives with his little brother who he takes care of named Chewie. And Chewie plays a decisive role in the climax of the film, in a big violent showdown with some monsters. But eventually Gamma and Beta come by Laureano and Chewie's house where they want to learn about love. Like they show up at the door and they're like, hey, we don't have love on our planet. Can you explain to us what love is? And he explains love by singing a song accompanied by a jukebox that's in his house.
Yeah, I didn't know what to make of this. I mean, it certainly pays off in the plot. But I was asking myself, why would there be a jukebox in the house? Not only a jukebox, but a jukebox they have to use a quarter on. They're having to pay to use it. And I'd never heard of this being a thing, and maybe it wasn't. Maybe it just makes sense in this film.
Who would come and collect the quarters for the jukebox inside your house?
I don't know, but this man loves music, so maybe it's a good investment.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month. Taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
But I think here actually is where we start to get a taste of conflict between the visiting aliens, because it starts to become clear that maybe both Gamma and Beta want Laureano for themselves, but Laureano seems to only love Gamma. He's just like not into Beta.
Right. He's just not into her. And, you know, he's very upfront. You know, he's very clear that he's not French.
He's not
interested in two women. He wants one woman. And
right.
and there has to be this mutual attraction there. So yeah, he's just not feeling it with Beta.
It's literally in the song. He's like singing lyrics about how he says, love is when two people love each other. If there were three, that would be French.
Yes. There are at least a couple of of digs at France in the picture, and also a really awesome dig at Texas at one point. So
The comedy's pretty much nonstop. I forgot that part.
It's something about, they like big things in Texas. What would they think of this? But I can't remember what they were referencing.
Oh, okay. Was it a monster?
Probably a monster, yeah. Okay. Or a spaceship or something.
But Laureano is also so lovable in the gentlemanly way he sort of explains things to Beta. So she also wants him for herself. But he's like, hey, you know, you can't make somebody love you. Look, I like this other lady.
Yeah. And luckily, he has some songs prepared about the nature of love.
Right.
And he sings them for us. And so that's very helpful.
And they're great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, we haven't really gotten into the monsters yet. So maybe we should explain the monster subplot and then how that links up with what's going on with Laureano and Gamma and Beta.
Okay, yeah, let's dive into these monsters and certainly jump in if you have a different name than I have, because I think the names differed slightly. So first of all, let's talk about this big reptilian cyclops character. He's the one on that Italian movie poster that I described earlier. This creature's name is Uk, spelled UK,
Uk,
and he is the king of the fire planet.
Yeah, so he was also called Uk in mine, and he speaks in a kind of brutish way. He says, like, me king fire planet.
Yeah, he's all action. He's like, we're going to fight. You know, he's a very brutal kind of an alien. But then we also have a cerebral alien, and when I mean cerebral, I mean he's got a big old brain, a big pulsating brain. This is the Prince of Mars. This is, in my version, Tagul.
In mine, I think he was Tawal.
Okay.
So he's the Prince of Mars. Yeah, I think you only maybe find that out later. I'm not sure. But at first, he just looks kind of like I will say again, the monster design is great. He's got these kind of translucent layers over his eyeballs, and you can see these obscure pupils moving around back behind the translucent layer. It's a very creepy effect. I want to just emphasize yet again sometimes how strangely scary the monsters are for this light musical romantic comedy.
Yeah, a lot of love went into the craft of making these monsters.
Yeah.
And you're not going to watch this and think, oh my goodness, real monsters. You know, they look like movie monsters of this time period, but they're really good. I loved watching them do their thing.
But he's kind of like the brain mutant from This Island Earth, except maybe actually even more lovely. He's got the big brain head, the creepy eyes, and he's got this fish-like kissy mouth, the kind of trumpet lips that work back and forth in a disgusting manner.
Yeah. All of these you can certainly connect to other monster traditions and other films of the time period, but I love how distinct they are. In the Stuff to Blow Your Mind Discord, somebody had shared a video about the sameness of monsters in modern pictures, which is an interesting argument that maybe I have some critiques on, but you cannot say that these monsters are all the same in this picture. They all feel distinct. They feel like they definitely arise from different planets, from different evolutionary paths, and you get a taste of their culture as well.
That's right. Yeah. So we had the brain mutant. He's the Prince of Mars, but then there is also this furry spider beetle. He's like a cross between a giant killer insect and a squatch.
Yeah, this is Utir of the Red Planet, and he's ravenous and warlike, but plotting, not just brutal violence like the King of the Fire Planet. No, he's more like, you know, he's sneaky. He has some wonderful lines too. He has this bit where he's speaking in this creepy voice, and the translation I had was, "I am Utir of the Red Planet, and I will devour your entrails by the light of Utar and its seven moons." So good.
Yeah, like I was saying, strangely dark and good, like, creepy imagery. In my version, I think he was actually called Crassus, which is the most different of the names we've reviewed so far. I'm not sure what explains that difference.
Now, the other male alien in this picture is this fleshless creature that kind of looks like a bear skeleton that's kind of floating there.
Yeah.
He has no name as far as I can tell, and all we know is that his homeworld is a place where the people gave up their material form ages ago, and now they're just animate beast bones floating around and talking and laughing creepily.
Yeah, they're rasping phantoms from beyond who are just pure embodied hate, and our fang bone buddy here he's a mockery of life itself.
Yeah. The one thing they all have in common, aside from being males, is that they all detest the fact that they have been kidnapped. They do not like it at all, but they're powerless against the superior technology of Venus.
Right. Gamma and Beta have it locked down because as powerful as these monsters are, they cannot overpower science, which Gamma and Beta have on their side. They've got some powerful technology that even a real strong, beefy reptile cyclops can't overcome.
But of course, as the plot develops, like we said, love tears this duo apart. Gamma is
thirst for blood.
Yeah, love and thirst for blood. Beta gets fed up and she resorts to her old ways. We get this big reveal, which I think is an ideal reveal for any movie. This is a great plot twist for any film. Suddenly reveal that one of your main characters is a space vampire. She gives in to her dark thirst, is essentially cursed by Gamma for giving into this thirst, and then Beta basically decides, well, heck, I'm just going to let the males loose. I'm going to strike a bargain with the males, and we're just going to rampage over this planet, and we're going to do what we like with Earth.
Yes, that's right. So Beta vamps a guy. She there's some rancher guy, and she drinks his blood. And then when Gamma finds out, it's like, oh no, that's a death sentence back on Venus. Again, politics. A vampirism is a political issue in the interplanetary politics of this movie, where it's like a known crime that has been observed and dealt with in the past. And if you drink the blood of a human, you will face the death penalty on Venus.
Yeah, it raises a lot of questions. Like, I was wondering, what is it like on the Shadow Planet? Is everyone a vampire there? Or are these like former Venusians who had to acquire some sort of vampiric infection in order to survive on a shadow world? What's going on here? There's something there. There's something under the surface. And it's so tantalizing because it feels thought out. It feels whole. It doesn't feel like just a scrap of sci-fi thrown into this romance.
Yeah, again, the movie, it's catching you off guard every single twist and turn. We were screaming at this. Just an amazing twist.
Oh, and when we say space vampire, she can turn into a bat. And it looks pretty good.
A big bat. At one point, Lalo Gonzalez points at it because it's swooping down to attack Gamma. And he's like, look, a vulture. But so, yeah, from here we get moving into the third act.
Oh, wait. There's one more important bit here, and that is that Beta has also aligned with the Prince of Mars.
Yes.
So I don't know if they're going to be married and rule over Mars. There's some talk of this, though it's also pointed out by the Prince of Mars that he doesn't particularly find her attractive, but it seems like they're willing to work through this.
Oh, yeah, there's a great part where he's like, you are very ugly, but I... What does he say? He's like, you are extremely ugly to me, but I admire your dedication to hatred or something.
Yes.
And she's like, ooh, like she's really excited by this observation.
Yeah, her plan now is, so with the loose males, they're going to destroy the initial settlement of Earthlings. And then they're going to spread out and just take out the rest of the planet. But she realizes if she's going to lead this, she needs to assign tasks to the different monsters. So she divides humanity up among the loose males. So Utyr gets the children. That's the spider monster. Yeah. Uk, he gets the animals. And he seems fine with this. He's like, yes, let me at those cows.
I will eat cows, yeah.
And Beta and the Prince of Mars, they're going to, I think they're just going to get the blood of humanity. They bond over their thirst for blood, and they're like, let's do it. They seem to leave the bone guy out of this entirely. He shows
the bone
up later.
Guy, does he? He disappears from the movie at one point.
He is in the scene where all the aliens, all the loose males attack our hero.
Okay.
But he's not very obvious in that scene. You kind of see clattering bones in the background. Like maybe they couldn't figure out how to properly bring that to life on screen. I don't know.
I really thought the bone guy disappeared from the movie, but yeah, I could be wrong. So I don't recall him in the conclusion. Does anybody defeat him in the final battle?
No. He does kind of vanish at that point because all the other monsters get some sort of a cool death. So Ook's face is burned off by the robot. They're kind of wrestling. There's a robot
battle. Burns him, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Brainiac guy, the big brain guy, is shot in the eye by the boy.
With like a slingshot, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah, with a slingshot.
And then his brain deflates like a punctured volleyball.
Yeah, yeah, it's a nice grisly scene. Yeah. Utir, the spider beast, is forced to bite himself and kill himself with his own venom.
Brutal.
Oh, and then Beta has a pretty awesome death scene as well.
Yeah, she goes to attack Gamma, and Gamma sort of like dodges out of the way at the right time, and then Beta gets staked, like vampire staked with a branch that's sticking up.
Yeah, and in all of that, the fleshless one is never defeated. So I don't know. Maybe he... we don't know what part of humanity was given over to him. Perhaps he just went out and claimed it, and he's the one who wins the day.
Oh, but there's one last thing I almost don't want to say because I don't want to spoil it because it's so good, but there's a stinger right at the end of the movie. If you don't want to hear it, if you don't want to be spoiled, you want to see the movie for yourself, maybe you should stop right here. But if you're okay with it, the surprise at the end where Tor and the jukebox fall in love.
Yes.
Amazing reveal.
Yeah, because Tor makes eyes at the jukebox pretty early. He's like, hey. And then at the end, they're happy together. They're leaving the planet. They have found each other, and they're flying away in a spaceship.
Yeah, he like compliments the jukebox. He's like going up to the glass saying, like, what beautiful bulbs you have.
Yes. So at the end, everybody's happy. Everyone's in love. Monsters and the forces of evil have been defeated, and it seems like political stability has been maintained for the interplanetary community.
Gamma, in the end, learns that it was wrong to kidnap males from all the planets to take them back to Venus. Instead, she's like, hey, look, I'm not going back to Venus. I found a man on Earth I'm in love with, so we're just going to hang out here in Mexico.
Yeah. Though he no longer has a cow, so I'm not sure what he's going to do.
Oh.
Yeah, the cow was killed and stripped to bones by Uck.
To bones. With a stand. So, the Cyclops reptile comes in and, like, bites the cow, and then the cow is just clean, like a bone model of a cow on a stand with, like, bars.
Yeah, he did a great job.
But anyway, I was going to say, Laureano, he's always going to find a way to get by.
It's true, yeah. He's a survivor.
So, Ship of Monsters, what a delight.
Yeah, this one really is a delight. I highly recommend viewing this. Now, I think I should also add that all versions of this are apparently in black and white. I don't think there's any evidence of an actual color cut of the film. If you think back to our Santo and the Tomb of Dracula episode, we discussed how close to a decade later, you had this tradition of shooting in black and white and in color for different markets. I don't think that was the case here. I ran across some color images of the film, but I think these were just colorized stills that were used to promote it.
Oh, that would make sense, yeah.
But still, even in black and white, this film is just, it's so alive. You'll just be drawn right in.
Piporo forever.
All right. Well, if you would like to check out additional episodes of Weird House Cinema, you can find it in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. You'll find that wherever you get your podcasts. Weird House Cinema publishes on Friday. We're primarily a science podcast, and you'll find our core episodes of the show, Stuff to Blow Your Mind, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, an artifact episode on Wednesdays, listener mail on Mondays, and a vault entry over the weekend. That's a rerun.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid Kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The, holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The, make a splash all summer kind of fun. The, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find, for the fun of it, kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island opens its gates April 20th.